Blog Talk Radio.
Ain't no stopping us now.
three words. Tell this nation what we are talking about. They all need words. You don't need to have a great vocabulary to utter. You don't need to have a philosophical bit to grasp. They are three little words. We want to let the world know that these words describe what we mean and what we are determined to do about racial injustice. One is the word all. We don't want some of our rights. We don't want a few token handouts here and there. We want all of our rights. There are some people who say that we need to go back to Africa. And there are some others who tell people in the South, leave the South. You can't be free, so get out. But down in Alabama and Mississippi and Georgia, South Carolina, we are saying something else. We want all of our rights, and we want all of our rights here in Alabama and Mississippi and South Carolina. Is telling us to slow up. We can hear voices telling us to cool off. Our only answer in conversation time must be that we have cooled off too long, and if we keep cooling off, we'll end up in a deep freeze. We must go on and say, no, what we are saying to this nation is that we want all of our rights. We want them here. We want all of them, not next year, not next week, but we want them now, at this hour. This is what we're saying.
What your life can truly be. Shining star for you to see. What your life can truly be.
Give everybody a hand for being here tonight. This is the Black Business Billionaires Network Club. The Black. People tell me say it slow. You know, my South Carolina accent sometimes gets to me and people don't understand what I be saying. I heard a brother the other day say something in South Carolina, Geechee Gullick. They call it Gullick. That's the history of in South Carolina, the Gullick people. And he said something in Gullick. And it's that South Carolina, what people call Geechee talk. He said, go down there, man, get that thing down there, but what I tell you before I get there, boy. And so everybody that was saying on the TikTok, nobody understood what he said. You have to be from South Carolina to understand what he said, and I understood what he said. So I'm going to say this slow and clearly in the Queen's English. The Black Business Billionaires Network Club. The Black Business Billionaires Network Club. The Black Business Billionaires Network Club. If you say that quick enough, it's a tongue twister. Well, we have so much going on in the news. So many historical things are being plotted on in the United States of America. Kevin McCarthy, the House Speaker, for the first time in hundreds of years, has been ousted from the seat. It was expected. You know, the one man rule, where one man can put on the floor of the House a resolution to vacate the House Speaker, was Matt Gaetz. If you remember, Matt Gaetz, as a part of the ruling to vote in Kevin McCarthy as House Speaker, Kevin McCarthy had to give a lot of sessions to the Republicans in order to get to get into the seat as House Speakers. Between Getz, Mark Getz, and Marjorie Taylor Greene, and some other House Republicans and congressmen, he had to give up a lot. But one thing Matt Getz asked for, he wanted a one-man rule that one man can bring on the floor to vacate the speaker's seat. And he used it. Duh, Kevin McCarthy, are you that dumb? Don't you know why he put that ruling on there? Because Matt Gaetz is a little squeak. He's a little squeal. Not that I like Kevin McCarthy. He's a squeal too. But Matt Gaetz is a little squeal trying to become a big wheel in a big pond. He's trying to make himself something he's not, and he collaborated with himself, and he figured out, if I can get a one-man rule to subsequently bring it to the floor, bring a motion to bring a, he asked Kevin McCarthy to make a ruling as if he wanted to become the House Speaker, to make a ruling that one person, one man vote, one man can bring a rule to the floor. You needed 21 people. You needed the majority of 21 people to put it on the floor to a ruling to vacate the House Speaker's seat. Matt Gaetz tells Kevin McCarthy when he was running for House Speaker, if you make a ruling that one person, one congressman, one senator, one House Republican can go to the can put a ruling on the floor to vacate the House Speaker's seat, I will vote for you, and I will get. He had 11 or 12 disparaging Republican congressmen and senators that didn't want to vote for Kevin McCarthy, and they were backing Matt Gaetz, and Matt Gaetz said, if you give me that ruling, I'll get them to vote for you and put you into the House Speaker, because the Republicans had the majority of the power to vote them out, and the Democrats have a very marginal small control over that. They have a small voting block for that, and so Matt Gaetz got his wish. Kevin McCarthy got his wish. He got into the House Speaker. He was there for 9 months. He got into House Speaker because he were able to give them every concession that they requested. He practically gave away all the power of the House Speaker. And he might as well not been a House Speaker. He's more like a House Mouse. You know, that's what he should have been, a House Mouse, because he gave away every conceivable authority that the House Speaker has. The House Speaker is the most powerful position after Vice President, because it's the President, the Vice President, and the House Speaker. If something happened to the President, the Vice President becomes President. If something happened to both of the the President and the Vice President, then the House Speaker steps up as a pro temp interim President, until they vote officially vote somebody else in. But nevertheless, you know, Kevin McCarthy gave all the concessions to these people. He gave all the power away as House Speaker. He was just stupid. And so it came back to bite him in the behind. Matt Gaetz used the same system of a one-man rule to bring it on the floor to vacate the speaker's position. And Matt Gaetz did that. They had a hearing on it. The Democrats wasn't gonna back Kevin McCarthy, because Kevin McCarthy started the investigation to impeach President Biden. And you know, Kevin McCarthy's constantly blaming everything on the Democrats. and he's all over the news, you know, spreading his bad news. But then it comes to the point where you need people. You know, he needed the Democrats to vote against the motion to vacate the House Speaker seat. The Democrats didn't support him. 216 of them did not support him. And the little bit of eight of the Republicans who wanted him out with the 216 Democratic votes plus their eight, that made him 218 to 210 or 216 to 210. Y'all can go back and check it out. That made enough people to oust the House Speaker. Y'all haven't been done in hundreds of years. Haven't been never done. It's a historical thing. So they got rid of Kevin McCarthy. They're looking for another House Speaker. Kevin McCarthy said he will not run again. He's been there for 9 months. He said he will not run again. The guy that he put in there pro temp is this guy, McHenry, who is extremely upset with every damn body. He took the gavel Friday, and he damn near broke it because he was so upset. He was banging on the thing to show his Republican partners that he's upset about his friend Kevin McCarthy losing the seat. Well, so come, so go. That's the way it is. You know, he gave everything up, and people get mad. People get mad at you. He know Matt Gaetz never liked him in the first place, and he gave him enough fire to kill him, to kill Kevin McCarthy. And that's exactly what he did. He burnt Kevin McCarthy in a fire with kerosene, okay, and he got rid of him. So historically, there was an interim, Mr. McHenry, a speaker. They need a house. You need an official House Speaker, though, because you can't vote for nothing. You can't proceed with any legislation, any floor decisions, any decision on the floors, any amendments, any motions. It's Robert Rules parliamentary procedures can't be followed because you have to have an official speaker. There's nobody that going to get all of the ones that running. There's no guarantee because nobody likes them as well. The Republicans are a backstabbing, self-destructive group. They're killing each other, but the roosters come home to roost, and they're getting what they're getting their just desserts. They're getting exactly what they deserve to be exposed for the scum that they are. So they're looking for a House Speaker. They got the nut, Jim Jordan. Mr. Al Scalise, who seems to be handicapped physically and mentally, and Jim Jordan is just a rat. He's just spineless, ignorant person. So they have no qualified people. Their best bet, and I know they're not going to take this, Hakeem Jeffries. Their best bet is to let Hakeem Jeffries go in there because, first of all, he's neutral to all this internal bullshit that's going on with Republicans. He can neutralize that. Why? Because he's not a part of it. So he can get the nonpartisan that he needs. Plus, he got 218 Democrats backing him up that will vote. They will vote as a bloc. They all would vote together. So with that, plus whatever he can get on the other side of the aisle, as they say, the bipartisan procedures, bipartisan process, if he can get the Republicans to support some things, he can get bipartisan ruling, they can get some of this stuff done, they can get some of these legislative procedures going, some of these laws changed, get things going. The Republicans are destroying the government. They had 300 military soldiers that were probably promoted, did not get promoted because of this Timberville, this cracker from Mississippi, I think he's Mississippi or Alabama, one of them places. He just don't want to give it up. He don't want to do anything about it, and he just want to hold everything up. He didn't want to see power, black power, get into power, because you have two black men at the highest level of military leadership and control and management. You have Austin, Lloyd Austin. He is the Secretary of Defense. That's the administrator of, if you will, of the military. He, Lloyd, controls all branches of the military, all branches of the military, everyone from the Air Force down to the National Guard. He is the man. And when you control the military of your country, you're one of the most powerful men there is. Don't sleep on it. That's a very powerful position, very powerful. Supplementing it is the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the head of Joint Chiefs of Staff. You're controlling all the heads of the military. Brother Q Brown. He's the Joint Chiefs of Staff. He's head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. And so you have the head of Joint Chiefs of Staff, and you have the Secretary of Defense. You got the two most powerful men in America, if you will. And they're both African American. None, Timmerville being this cracker from the South, he did not want to see that. He did not want to see that. Retired as Joint Chiefs of Staff, the head of Joint Chiefs of Staff, and John Q.C. Brown was his replacement. And so they put him on hold. Now they come around and they said they want to pay Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin a dollar. They want to take his salary down from $250,000 to $1. This is the kind of idiot thinking of the Republicans to try to tear people down. So they want to tear down the military. They want to tear down the strength of the military, and they want to take away these people's salaries. So they want John C.Q. Brown to get a dollar, and they want Lloyd Austin to get a dollar. I don't think they have the power to do that, but nevertheless, these people can waste time by putting these motions on the floor and by trying to get them passed and by getting all this shit going on. And at the same time, people, a lot of white people support these people, but at the same time, the government is going down. Your Social Security is not going to get paid. Welfare, food stamps, welfare, subsidized rent, that's not going to get done. Roads and bridges and development, things of that sort, it's not going to get done. The post office, people, it's taking 3, 4, 5 days to get mail that usually take 24 hours. Because the post office is closing, is getting slower and closing down as well. So when you hear about government closing down, y'all, that's terrible. It affects every aspect of the American society, because when you close down the government, you pay nobody. And when y'all know what happens when you don't pay people. When you don't pay people, people don't work. So when their salaries close down, people close down with the salary. So we're in a crazy place right now in America. The banking system is going digital in December. The American dollar is going to be nothing, nada. Right now, they at the stock market level, they're saying the dollar's worth a penny. So I don't know and they say it could drop. So I don't know how much you can drop from a penny. It might be mean zero. It's going to be just like just having paper. There's people contacting me via email, telephone, mail from other countries, Dubai and Turkey. And guess what? They're selling the American dollar for 10, 15, 20 cents on the dollar. They're selling it. Hundreds of millions of dollars of it. They sell it because they know it ain't gonna be worth nothing. So here we are. The roosters come home to roost, as Malcolm said, because what goes around comes around. You dig a ditch, the Bible said dig another ditch because you're going to fall in the next one. You can't plan to fail other people and don't think you're going to fail yourself, and that's what's happening in America. They're failing themselves. It reminded me the other day, I was asked to speak, probably tomorrow or whenever of the day, to some people in a Zoom meeting concerning my experience in the civil rights movement, my experience in the segregated South, my experience in America living under Jim Crow. And it reminded me, Jim Crow basically was laws to demean, to distract, to destroy black men and women and families. It was a demeaning time in this country, and it's still going on now, but it was out in the open back in the 50s under Jim Crow. It was out in the open during the civil rights movement. It was out in the open. You could see the racism. It was plain as you could read and see. I lived in a situation where I could not go to school with white children, white-only schools. Yes, I couldn't sit on the bus if it was crowded. People talk about just sitting in the back of the bus, but they never talk about if the bus was totally crowded with white people. You could not get on. They did not stop and pick up black people. Black people rejected to get on the bus. And I know when I say these things to people, they look at me like I got a third eye in the middle of my head, like I'm talking out of my, like I'm smoking crack and I'm talking some craziness. But that's reality. You couldn't own a car. How people got cars, I don't know. But you couldn't own a car. You couldn't go to school. You couldn't read and write. It's the same thing. Jim Crow was just the laws continuing the destruction, the dehumanizing, the incriminating, and the embarrassing, and just the frustrating black folks in another way. It was another form of slavery. And I'll tell you why, and I'm going to tell you why that happened. You know, as much as people want to, Lincoln was a good man. He freed the slaves. Lincoln was a piece of shit to me. Lincoln said in his address after the Emancipation Proclamation, during the Emancipation Proclamation, and before the Emancipation Proclamation, he said, if Negroes, colored to whatever you want to call them, if Negroes are not slaves and they become free, they cannot stay. Listen to what I'm saying to y'all. I'm quoting verbatim. Lincoln said, black people could not stay in America because we were not human. We were not of the same creative, God didn't create us. We wasn't equal to white people. And his mama was a black slave, as quiet as it was kept. But anyway, he said that we were not human. We were not of the same species as white people. We were not equal to white people. We didn't have the same brain or mental capacity to participate and to be around white people. We were not able to that. And he sent black people to every corner of the world that he could to get them out of America. It was just too many of us to get us all out. But he sent people to Haiti. He sent people to the West Indies, Jamaica, Trinidad, Tobago. He sent them to Africa. He sent them, which you know, Liberia, it means liberty in Africa. Liberia is a country in Africa where all those people in Liberia are people who was enslaved in America. They all, if you will, they're all African Americans who who was shipped to Liberia. Liberia was a country that was developed after slavery, and they sent all of these black people to Liberia, to Africa, because Lincoln had a plan that he was going to get rid of all the black people in America. Think about it. Think about how mean and evil and destructive and crazy you have to be. But Lincoln really despised, hated, was genocide and killing of black people. That was Lincoln. Don't let nobody get it twisted. Don't let nobody tell you no damn lies. That's why they got critical race theory. That's why they don't want to teach black history, because they don't want to tell you the truth of the demeaning, evil thing that happened. Babies being foot warmers for slave masters. Babies being used as bait for alligators. Raping, molesting babies and children, young girls at the age of 10 and 12 and 13 were molested by the slave masters. Young boys, 9 and 10, 11, 12, they don't talk about this stuff, were molested by white women. And some of them was gay, and they molested girls, women molested girls, and gay men molested boys. This is the humanizing experience that black people went through. And it continued during my time in South Carolina with the Jim Crow laws, with the sign that says coloreds only, whites only, no coloreds. You saw signs in stores saying no coloreds. I remember a new store opened up in Main Street in South Carolina, in Allendale, South Carolina, where I'm from, and my dad didn't see a sign saying no coloreds, no blacks or whatever, and he went in to buy me some shoes. I was 5 years old. Went to buy me some shoes. And as a child, you don't know what's going on when people are talking. You don't understand the whole dynamics of it. But I was told later on what happened. And so my dad went into the store to buy me some shoes. And the man said, "We don't serve niggas here. Get out." You know, something very derogatory. And I remember as a child, my father holding my hand and me looking up and had, you know how you feel? You feel strange about something when you see a face of your father looking so evil and mean and upset. And so as a child, you just pick up that feeling. And so I was 5 years old, but I saw the feeling, and he was holding my hand so tight, I thought he was going to break it. It was a moment. It was not only just psychological, but it was spiritual. And that experience stayed with me all of my life. Y'all, it was hell in South Carolina, in Allendale, South Carolina, where I grew up, little small town, maybe about 3,000 or 4,000 people at the time. It was hell. The white people were ignorant. Most of them was farmers. Most of them was uneducated. Most of their kids didn't go to school. So you had a lot of white people in Allendale, South Carolina, out in the farm area where I grew up, that were farmers, that didn't go to school, didn't get educated, the kid wasn't educated, and so they were like hillbillies. I know many of y'all watched the Beverly Hills Hillbillies that show used to come on, that comedy used to come on, that sitcom used to come on. They were like that. They were ignorant, and you had to deal with them. But on top of dealing with ignorant white people, uneducated, uncultured, just totally hateful, and even as a child, I walked by certain places and I saw men hung up in trees. It was a terrible time. And the people were just ignorant and they were evil, because most of the poor white people were being ostracized themselves. They were being dehumanized. They were being disruptive. They were being criminalized. They were being abused as well. And they turned around and abused the black people as much as they could. And so it was just an evil, evil environment. And they want me to talk about that. I don't like talking about it, but I'm going to But it's good to tell your truth. It's good to tell folks what you know is right. So I tell people, I'm not asking nobody about America. I don't need no foreigner to come here. You know, these foreigners come here and they talk about, oh, my mother and father came here with nothing in their pocket. That's some bullshit. Number one, how they got on the plane? Did they go into the luggage area and hidden boxes? How did they get here? They had to have some money. How did they get an apartment? How did they get some food? How did they get started? How did they get clothes? How did they go? You know, it's no such thing as nobody comes to America with nothing in their pocket. And all of a sudden, you know, this Vivek Mama Sammy running for president, such an idiot. And all he does is talk demonstrative against African Americans. Don't know all in the Kool-Aid. Don't know the flavor. And Don Lemon told him, and it was correct on national television, CNN, on international television, CNN. He said, you're not living in my skin as a black man growing up in the 50s and the 60s in America. You can't come here and tell me what my experience is. He gonna tell him that the NRA was created to help black people get free. Bullshit. That the Civil War was fought for black people to get free. Bullshit. You don't. First of all, you don't know what you're talking about. Go read. All these people that come to America, all these foreigners come to America, telling me every goddamn thing that I should do, what I shouldn't do, what I should have did. Shut up. You can't tell me nothing. You can't tell me. If you're not African American, you're not. And Dr. Claude Anderson said this so many times. People who not experiencing the same thing you experience. People who did not go through what you went through in America have no right to come here and tell me shit. Things that I've been through in this country, there's nothing nobody can tell me. Marcus Garvey might was a good guy, and he might came here with good intentions to send people back to Africa, but Marcus Garvey can't tell me nothing because he didn't live this truth. He didn't live this truth. By the time Marcus Garvey came and everybody else came, things were settled. African Americans took all the blows. We took all the heartache, all the pain, all the suffering. Blood, like my father said, blood, sweat, and tears. We took all of that. And now for somebody to come tell me that they're going to explain to me what's going on, you can't tell me nothing. If you was not there, if you didn't experience the heartache and the pain that I went through, and I tell young black people, yes, I can say something because I went through the hell, so you don't have to go through it. I would write a book titled "African Americans Live the American Nightmare," so you can come and live the American dream. I would write a book saying, everybody got adopted, but African-Americans still living in foster care. Why? Because America will not adapt African-Americans as they own. They're not. And so even though we participate and they use us for political pawns, they use us for economic pawns, they use us for to make themselves look like they so good and they're doing all these wonderful things with all the people coming here of color, how they help their blacks, like we belong to them, like we're a damn puppet. No, America, I'm not your black. I've been created by the creator of God, and I'm his man. I'm his creation. I belong to him. And so, people, when you come to this country, first of all, you can't tell me you know the history because the history has been lied about. I don't even know the goddamn history. 100%, because there have been lies told. I'm at 73. I'm hearing things now about African American history that I did not know. I did not know the 25 African American women that changed the history of science and inventions and changed the world. I did not know the 10 doctors in America, African American, who saved lives through blood plasma. Blood transfusions, a pharmaceutical development of antibiotics that people take against diseases and sicknesses that help increase their immune system so they can be strong against any kind of sickness. Antibiotics, African American, first successful open heart surgery in the world. African American surgeon, first car, African American, street light to save people from getting hit from cars, green, yellow, red, African American, tires, hair comb, hair grease, cake, apple pie, you know, every sugar cane, cotton, money, the economy. America became the richest economy during the 1400s and 1500s and 1600s because of cotton and sugar cane. It was an international product that was manufactured and distributed all over the world, and America became the richest country in the world. Every Ivy League university built by African American slaves, Harvard, Yale, Princeton, Cornell, Brown, Howard, you name it. You name the universities, we built them. And went and built 116 universities and colleges for ourselves when the cracker told us we couldn't go to college with them. We couldn't go to university with them. And most African Americans, check this out, most African Americans that invented all this medicine and all this pharmaceuticals and all this open heart surgery and all these medical procedures and all these cars and all the manufacturing, they went to Europe and got educated and came back to America with the knowledge. So don't come here to America, and I'm saying this in any way you want to receive it, and tell me shit, because you do not know. You do not know. You don't know, people. If you don't get a book, if you don't go to the YouTube, if you don't go to Google, if you don't look it up concerning African-American and African-American history and our contributions and our blood, sweat, and tears and our death and our lives that was lost to make this country what it is now, and you get your ass on an airplane at your choice to come here to live a better life, to save your families. You got millions of people at the border walking across the river, walking across the water, some of them dying, some of them hungry, some of them haven't eaten, and the children are haven't changed their diapers, and they had no infant meal and they had no milk for months. Feel bad for them. I feel bad for them as a human being to a human being, as a man of God to a human being. I feel bad for them, and I pray for them. But they're that desperate to get to America. But the only reason they're desperate, because somebody had to die, somebody had to take the blows, somebody had to take the pain, somebody had to take the death to get to America to where it's at today. Somebody had to pave that way. And it's African Americans. And irregardless if we believe, we don't believe, we have the same religion, a different religion, whether the person is a Muslim, whether the person is a Christian, whether the person is an Israelite, whether the person is a Jew, whether the person is a Buddhist, if a person believes in a monkey, whatever it is. We have to understand that we have a common goal. We have a common relationship in this country. We have a common history and experience as African Americans. And nobody going to feel that pain. Nobody going to understand that pain. Because people come to America for life, liberties, and pursuit of happiness. They come for a soda, a sandwich, and shelter. They ain't thinking about no damn history. They could give goddamn less about the contributions of African Americans to make this the place that it is today, so that they can come and they can have liberty. And they need to be reminded. You're sitting on big shoulders. You're sitting on people who died and bled. Families were lost. I lost families because of being black. I lost uncles and cousins and nephews and nieces because they were black in America, in the South. It's real, and you don't forget it. It's hurtful. So when I say damn and shit, I mean that. I mean that. I might get cut off the radio, you know, they might censor me or whatever. But I mean what I say, and I say what I mean because I lived it. Nobody can tell me nothing. It's nothing you can tell me. There's no way. You know, Marcus Garvey was a nice guy, but he couldn't come over here and tell me jack shit because nothing for him to say. You came after. You came after. I suffered and lived this thing. You came after, you know, when everything was better to deal with. It was more political, more economic. It was more a legal society. So for people to tell me that I have to listen to what they say, they're going to try to tell me what to do. They come here and say, African American women are evil. They're this. They're that. They're going to come in and critique African-American women. They're going to come in and critique African-American men. They're going to critique African-American families. They're going to critique our children. Hell no. You don't get that privilege. Because whether you like these little gangbangers, these little dope sellers, these little street thugs, these rappers, these alcoholics, these drug addicts, these homeless, these helpless, these high school dropouts, these ignorant, so-called ignorant black people, African-Americans in this country, much as you hate them, there's a reason for the conditioning. The Bible will tell you some will survive and some will not. There's a reason for it. It's not that simple, but people love to keep it simple. People love to try to make it simple, and people love to try to make it simple because now they're not suffering like I did. They don't have the memories that I have. And I don't discuss this all the time. I don't always talk about this, not in depth. But if I have to, I can break it down like a science. Because I know this shit, and I know it well. So I'm not accepting nobody to come to me and try to tell me nothing. If you just jump on the boat and came here yesterday or came here 10, 20 years ago, you can't tell me nothing because you did not come here for the struggle. You came here for the ice cream and cake. You came here for the money. You came here for the milk and the honey. You came here for the glory. You didn't come here to fight with me. You didn't come here to take some of the blows that we took during the civil rights movement, during Jim Crow laws, the shit that I've been through as a child, as a young man, as an adult. You didn't take those blows. So you don't qualify to tell me how and what and where and when. No. African-American people don't allow nobody to step over you. I'm going to say it like the sister said it. And I, you know, once again, we built this bitch. That's real. And now you're going to come over here and try to step over me and put me as a second-class citizen, put me back. Your own black people from Africa, from the Caribbean, from Asia, from Europe. Your own black people come here and try to step on top of your toes. The OJs say they smile on your face all the time. They're trying to take your place. The backstabbers. Because their mentality is doggy dog, crabs in a basket. Let me get every goddamn thing I can get. They got no humanity. They got no civil rights movement in their mind. They got no. A place. They're coming here on the authority of white people who control the immigration system, who control the economic system, who control the political system. So don't think black people coming here to do anything for you. Don't think they have the ability. They can't help you because they can't help themselves. If a man leaves his country to come here, that means he couldn't help himself where he was at. So I mean, to be honest, for me, to be honest, I don't expect much from them. Black people who come here, black, Indian, Spanish, Portuguese, Brazilian, any black person that come to America looking for a soda, a sandwich, and a shelter, anybody come to America trying to look for a handout or some help or whatever they coming for, they cannot help me. This thing with African-American, this civil rights movement, this human rights movement, this black power movement is too powerful for people coming here looking for the white man to give them a handout, give them a soda, give them a sandwich, give them a shelter, help them, help me, help me, help me. There's very little a person coming to America looking, seeking help can help. They can't help themselves. How are they going to help you? This movement is too big for them. So it gets convoluted, and it ends up in a big misunderstanding, because African Americans are coming from one place in time and one experience, and the black immigrant is coming from another experience, got a totally different mentality. I do not romanticize the Caribbean. I don't romanticize Africa. I don't romanticize black people, black immigrants coming to America, because I know their mentality. I know why they come, and I know what the pivotal point of reasoning, what they're thinking. And if you ain't got common sense to understand that, African Americans, then you're going to be lost in the sauce. You're going to get all messed up, because they will use you. They're in a desperate situation. They're in a dire need situation. And they're opportunists, and they would do anything that they can do to get over. If they have to destroy you, African American, kill you, get rid of you, helping the white man, they're going to do it, because I hear them all come here and they complain, and all their complaining is about black folk. They have no complaint with white people, who giving them the hell. I ain't giving you the hell. Because I ain't got no hell to give you. Because I don't control this mess. I live in it, and I fight for myself and my people and my children and my family. I'm here. But I ain't create this mess. I'm reacting. African-American people, let me explain something to y'all. African-American people did not create this bullshit. We did not create the mess here in America. We're reacting to it. We're trying to survive it. We're trying to get over it. We're trying to change it. We're trying to make it better for our kids, our grandkids, our great-grandkids, all the kids. We're trying to make it better for you. The most people that benefited from the death and pain of African-American people are black immigrants and white women. They benefited. I didn't benefit. I didn't get no kind of provisions to go to school. They wasn't patting me on the back because I had a GPA or a 4.0, or I had a A+ academic record. They didn't give a damn about that. They were telling my mother and father that I was mentally challenged and I needed to go to some kind of sub-economic classes. Some kind of special ed or some kind of crap. America didn't praise me for my ability to start college at 15, get a PhD at 21, to make my first million at 18. You think America was, and African American people, if you waiting for America to give you a standing ovation for all the things you achieved, you got a big heartache coming. They ain't gonna do it. They're not built like that. America, white Americans have no intentions of giving prompts or giving credit or giving support to African-American people at all. So you can go there and you can keep getting all these degrees, making all this money, getting all the success. All they're going to do is try to sneak around and find a way to get every dime you got, give you a white woman, give you a white man, give you a white controlled financial consultant, and find out ways to destroy you and take every damn dollar you got. So keep on with your white friends, your white women, your white husbands, and whatever it is you want, because the psychology is the same. It's damn hard for a white good man to try to be good to African-American people, because he's not in the position to do that. America's not built that way. They don't see you the way they see others. White police officers don't see black people the same way they see others. They don't see their own black chiefs of police the same way they see a white chief of police. White people don't see you in the same level of them. They could be white trailer trash. They can come from the white trailer park. They can come from the worst ghetto in America. But they still think they're superior and better to you, because that's what they've been taught by the American government. So when you find black immigrants coming to this country, they bond down to the white man because they've already been indoctrinated to think the white man is better, because the white man controlling them, the imperialism, the colonialism that they live under in the Caribbean, in Africa, they bring that same shit over here to America. Same thing as Spanish black people, Asian black people, all black people of color, They suffering under conditions of imperialism and colonialism, and they come here to America with that mindset that the white man is better, and their behavior is just of that, ignorant. So I can have a PhD, I can be a millionaire, but probably they see me, they don't see me as anything better than that white man, who could be a bum, a crackhead, a homeless, a crazy. They still see him in a different way for them blonde hair and blue eyes and that white skin. They see it differently. It's psychological. It's sociological. I have to keep telling people, I studied this crap. 6 years, 7 years studying this crap. I'm a retired psychologist. They told me sociology, geology, psychology, psychiatry. They explained to me how they make you crazy. Psychosocialization, how governments control people to think the way they want them to think, to control people to do what they want them to do like a puppet. I understood that. So when I say something to you, I experienced it, I studied it, I understand it, and I'm coming from many different angles of it. I'm coming from the academic, the social, the academic, the social, the political, the living, the actual experiencing and living this shit. I lived it. So there's very few things people could say to me. Very few things. I argue with black academics, black academia people, black economics. Young black people who got money, who got education, that think they're better than the black people from the past. I beg to differ, my brother, my sister. You're living off my back. If I didn't fight, if that man with a third grade, my grandfather only had a third grade education, but if he didn't fight and if he didn't get killed, he can get busted in his head and go through a lot of hell. All these young black people here can go to school and get money and act like they better than every goddamn body. You better think twice. Young black people, wasn't for people like me. I know I ain't famous. I ain't on television. I ain't in no history books. I ain't no Dr. King, but we all suffered. Dr. King was a great man. He did a lot. He did more than many of them because he changed the stats in the government policies, procedures, laws, and legislation. That's what I'm talking about. Talk is cheap. A lot of these leaders, when all they did was good, all they did is talk good, wrote books, got famous. But Dr. King changed the motherfucking system. A lot of these leaders, we'll be still sitting in the back of the bus, still picking cotton and sugar cane, still living in slavery and Jim Crow. It wasn't for Dr. King and those of us that fought with him, young people. As 5 years old, 6, 10, I remember the marches. I remember the things that went on in South Carolina. I remember what went on in Alabama, Mississippi, Virginia, Tennessee. I remember there were young people involved that drove this civil rights movement. So when you come over here and you started thinking that you're so better, think again. Think again. There's not a man that come to America from another country seeking a better life that get a PhD and make $100,000 million, if you will. If he makes $100 million and got every degree from every prestigious university, he's not better than my grandfather who only had a third grade education, that busted behind, stood up as a black man and fought against the conditions so that you can come to America and get an education and live a better life. So anybody, I don't care if you're Chinese, I don't care if you're German, Irish, Italian, Portuguese, Taiwanese, Brazilian, Dominican, Puerto Rican, Jamaican, Trinidadian, Antiguan, Dominican, whatever you come from, you come to America, you living off the back and the struggle and the death. And the pain and suffering of African American people is nothing else nobody can say. You can't add nothing to it. You can't take nothing away. If you got on an airplane and you choose to come to America because you needed a better life for your children and your wife and your family, all of them come here to work to send money back home. If you send the money back, you come in here and you working and you send the money back home, you're doing it because African Americans made it possible for it to happen. The white man would never put you in that position. So Nigerians are the smartest people and the richest people in America. That's what they say. No, they're not. They're living off the richness and the power of African Americans, like my grandfather with a third grade education, who busted his ass, who went through a lot of hell so that these people can come here, these Nigerians, and become rich and become educated. So you're not stepping over my grandfather. You're not thinking you're better than him because he had a third grade education. He had to do that because he had to take care of his mother and his family when they died, when his father died, and they were sharecropping. And the man, when his father died and they were sharecropping, and the man told his mama, "You have to get off the land because the husband is dead and you can't sharecrop this land." And his mother said, "No, I can do it." And he stepped up and said, "I'm going to work." My grandpa said, "Yes, I'm going to do it. I'm going to step up and I'm going to be the man." 14 years old. So if people come and think they're better than him, think again. Because you don't have the integrity. You don't have the guard. You don't have the ability to do what my grandfather did. And I'm not going to allow anybody to come to this country, disrespect those African American people who suffered and died and who worked hard. Fannie Lou Hamer got busted in the head in a jail fighting for the rights of black people. I'm not going to allow you to disrespect Fannie Lou Hamer, disrespect Sojourner Truth, disrespect Harriet Tubman, disrespect Dr. King, disrespect Mega Evers, disrespect Du Bois, disrespect Booker T. Washington, disrespect George Washington Carver, and there's millions of other people, name and unnamed, that I would not allow people to disrespect these people and their sacrifice for humanity, for a better America. And we have to get to the point where we make that known. I said the other day, God bless the black church. For the first time in history, I am so proud of the black church. Especially in Florida. They said, "You're not going to teach black history? Fine. We're going to learn it in God's house. We're going to teach black history in God's house." All across the South, black churches are coming together and they're teaching young people this history. They're teaching young people this truth. They're teaching young people the hell that we went through so that they could have a good life. God bless the black church. I am so proud of them that they're stepping up. It's time. It's time, black church. You got enough money to build your own damn schools, actually. You need to build you some schools. After schools, let the kids go to that regular school, and then after school have a place to come to and give them academic assistance in their learning, and at the same time give them the truth of the history of this country and the facts of this country. So it can be done. Don't mess with, let me tell you something. I'm proud to be African American. I'm proud of my brothers and sisters in Northwest, East, and South. Because one thing about African American people, you gotta know this, and this man has said it on YouTube, on television, nationally. There is no greater successful black man in the world like the African American. And I'm not saying that to be facetious. I'm not saying that to be arrogant. I'm not saying that to be nauseous or to degrade anybody. But statistical facts, when you talk about economics, we got it. Talk about academics, we got it. Talk about manufacturing, talk about science, talk about education, talk about mobilization, talk about black power, talk about institutionalized changes, talk about a people who said, when you said we couldn't have a bank, when they told us we can close their bank, African Americans built their own bank. Come on now. Well, Black Wall Street was more than just money. It was hospitals. It was banks. It was educational facilities. It was schools. When a white man told African Americans we couldn't get nothing from them, we built our own out of slavery and not a penny of support from them. That's African American. Don't mess with African Americans. I'm telling you, don't mess with them, white people. Don't mess with us. Because when you got a determined African American, you got a fight on your hands. And I'm telling you something, and I can say that because we've been proven. A lot of folk come here, but they ain't been to no struggle. They ain't been participating in a struggle. They ain't done nothing. A lot of these young folk coming up here now, African-American young folk, they ain't been tested. They don't know what it is. I know what it is. I've been tested. And I tell young black, African-American young black people, I know that I know that I know the power that God has given unto me because I've been tested. You ain't been tested yet. You ain't a real man. You haven't been tested, young man. Don't think you get out here and get a gun and you shoot another black man and you a gangster. No, you a wangster. You don't know. You say OG, old gangster, OG, okay. But you not that. And you don't know what it is to be that. You ain't fought the war that I fought in. People can go to Vietnam. People can go to World War I, World War II, Vietnam. They can go to any war you can think of. I've been in the worst war that you can ever think of, the war in America against humanity. I've been in the greatest war, and I survived it. So there is no person can tell me that I'm not this and I'm not that because I've been tested, and God brought me through. Now, you try to shake that. You try to take that reality and make a difference. There's nothing that I have not been tested and have come over. And young people got to understand that we older folks been through hell and we've been tested and we came out and we love you and we support you and we try to help you. But damn it, you got to recognize and give the respect. That's why it's important to tell our truth, to tell the African-American truth. That's why it's important. Young people don't know what the hell that I've been through. Forget about slavery and my grandfather and my grandfather's father and my father and my mama. People know the hell that I've been through, and I made it by the grace of God. Give him all the glory. We have to stop with the nonsense, and we have to come back to reality. We have to start thinking about the truth. Tell your truth, people. Tell your truth. Tell your truth. Tell it to everybody and anybody. Tell it. I don't go into no boardrooms with white people. I don't go to no organizational meeting with white people unless I can tell my truth. And if they know if Ron Robbins is coming, I'm telling my truth. Damn right. I don't care how uncomfortable they get, how they don't want to hear it. It's not this time. This ain't the meeting. Hell yeah. You call me up. As a ex-professor, ex-psychologist, I get called to do lectures and seminars and all that. I tell my truth. If you don't want, don't call me. They pay you pretty good money to do all that stuff, you know. But I'm just saying, if you don't want to hear my truth, don't call me because you ain't paying me to get up here and tell no shit and tell no jive and tell no lies. You ain't getting me to do that. If you call me up, I'm going to tell the truth. Why? Because young black people need to know. And a lot of people, a lot of these young black organizations and the universities and the colleges, the young black organizations and student body organizations, they have a right to call in different people for different aspects of American history to talk about it for their truth. And when I go, I tell my truth because these young people need to know, white young people need to know. And they want to know. They need to know the good, the bad, and the ugly. The good white people, the bad white people, they need to know why so they can choose this day whom they're going to serve. Because no man can serve two masters. The Bible says if you don't know what hot, you don't know what cold is. If you know what good, you don't know what bad is. If you don't know ugly, you don't know what pretty is. God said that. He gives you two things that you can balance off and see the difference in both things. So that's what we have to do with the history in this country. We have to open up to let people know both things, what's going on. So we're going to open up the mics, and we're going to hear what you have to say. I said my piece, so we're going to hear what people have to say. We're going to open up 205-742. Your mic is open. I think you're still on mute. 205-742.
205-742?
Yes, Doc, I'm here.
Oh, okay.
You're on fire tonight, Doc. You're on fire.
Man, you know something? I my three ex-wives will tell you I've been fired up ever since I got married. No.
But you,
and
then
I got fired up, you got married. But you know, it's like when you live something and you experience something and people trying to tell you something different, and it's constantly, you know, and sometimes you just shut up and don't say nothing because you see people are ignorant, but it balls up inside of you because I know I'm not trying to be nothing that I ain't. I ain't trying to be better than nobody. I'm not. I know I got a lot of struggles. I got, by the grace of God, here go I. Without him, I'd be nothing. But in the same token, I experienced some things that some folk didn't experience, and I need to tell my truth and tell it like it is, and people need to understand it and respect it. Because
you are here.
My children got to understand they're where they at because of what my grandmother did and my grandfather did and my mama and my daddy and so forth and so on. It's a trickle-down effect. You understand what I'm saying? Ain't no man a master of anything. My grandfather had a theory of education. My mama had college and university. My daddy had college. But before they can get to that, their mom and daddy had to sharecrop and work hard and not get an education so that they can make life better for their children. You understand what I'm saying?
That was the
conditions back in them days. Either somebody had to stay in the farm and somebody had to go learn, you know.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
So, that's what's called making them sacrifices.
Yeah.
Making them sacrifices. That's what black people got to learn. And this. Turn around and take the mirror and flash back over there and look over at the white people. The old white people, they do all what they did as an individual. They standing on their ancestors. That's why reparations and all these things, inheritance and all these things mean something. But we got so many black people who want to get on board with white folks, thinking that they're going to give them a little brownie point. And that's the same effect of the poor white man. The poor white man aligned himself up with the rich white man that he be first in line on what crumb fall off the table. But we had black folks get in line with that to get the little crumbs that they get from the poor white folks, because ain't none of us really dealing with rich white people. The rich white people done pitched us against each other. The real people that really run the 1%ers of the United States don't deal with poor folks, black or white. So we have to understand that. Get out of here. We have to understand that we are, as black folk, got to stick together. We got to remember the pain of our forefathers, and this go all the way back to the forefathers in the Bible. It's all about disconnect for white man. He want to disconnect, erase, eliminate the black history, the black experience. They want to get rid of all that. And then they want to grow the new generation up to start very brand new and fresh. And, you know, and brand new fresh with a goose egg. Go to college. You ain't got nothing. You got to buy your brand new first car. You got to buy your brand new first house. Why you couldn't go back and live in your parents' house? Or sold your parents' house and got the equity and money out of it to build you a new, better house than the house your parents growed up in.
Mm.
So the main thing about, and this go all the way back biblical, is they did disconnect us from the living, true, most high God and put us on white Jesus, put us on Christianity, put us on Muslim, Judaism. If you ever read now, the reason to know you,
but you know something. Support was not. Don't forget your thought. Sorry to cut you off, but something supporting what you're saying about the true religion. The Bible says, "Who is that? Who you going to serve? No man can serve two masters."
Absolutely.
So people got to learn to serve the right master. Now I'll say this. I know that I grew up under, you know, certain circumstances, and I've seen black people in some churches, and I've seen white people in some churches, and I understand there's a very manipulative psychology behind religion. The preachers, when you go to church on Sunday, they're manipulating to a certain extent. I'm not saying they're bad people, and I'm not saying they're manipulating to be bad, but sometimes they're manipulating you to be just trying to make what they feel is they're making you good. You understand?
Right.
So there's a little bit of that manipulation going and everything, but I'm saying this to say that still gives you the choice. You
right.
still have the choice to do right. You still, I'm
if,
saying,
if
even
you know what right
you
is,
might
God.
Not be following. Right, right. But I'm saying, I'm saying that even though if you do not know, maybe you're not following the right path of religion or the right leadership, or you're not looking at the right things, but still, you can stand up and be a moral person. You can stand up and be a moral woman.
Look at history, how they manipulated history. Just like you made a point about, we don't know the truth about history. We the original indigenous black people is indigenous to the land all over the world. White people was a virus that came in on us. You heard Malcolm X said Plummet Rock. We didn't land on Plummet Rock. Plummet Rock landed on us. Then they turned around there and did all the paperwork. Go get your 1910 census. Black people were the Indians. They started interbreeding black folks with Japanese and all these other races to create these so-called Indians you see in the history books or who they call the Indians. Indians are the black folks. So the Hebrew Israelites and the Israelites had came over to America thousands of years before Columbus came over here. God, we were the original mm-hmm. people on the planet. And mm-hmm. if you go back and trace back the white man, he came in the book of Genesis, but he was Esau. Esau, if you go back and reread the Bible, Esau is the original white man. That's the progenitor mm-hmm. of white folk. And that's the only time when color came into play. Color don't matter now, because after they conquer you, they rape your wife, your daughters, and your sisters, and they inject their seed into them. And then you come out there, you got to love what come out your own self. These women love the little white child, the white man that had sex with. Then that white boy come out. God said that whatever our fathers is, and we go back to Book of Numbers and verse 1, and that'll tell you, when we go to nature, whatever seed go in the ground, and the seed represent the man's sperm, and the earth represent the woman's womb. So whatever seed go into the earth, you plant an apple seed, what's going to come up? An apple. If a white man lay down with a black woman, there's a white seed within the earth. That's what that woman gonna push back out of her, and he might come out dog looking like a normal regular average black person, but that person is all about whatever their dad is. If a black man lay down with a white woman, that's a black child coming out of her. But the white man put the rule in place that 1/3, 1/5 drop of black blood enter into it, that make you black. That's a lie from Satan. It ain't about your skin color. Whoever your daddy was, that's who you is. Just like in nature, whatever seed go in the earth, if a pine tree seed go in the ground, a pine tree coming out. An oak tree go in the ground, an oak coming out. And see, but the lie, you don't know the lie from the truth. Because you looking at what the white man told us about skin color. It's plenty of white folks in this world that actually is black. Because their daddy was black, but they come out passing. That's where you get the word mulatto. Mulatto from. There was a lot of black folks. Just like you just mentioned about what we're hearing about Lincoln. Lincoln had a black mama, but he had a white daddy. And he was light enough to pass as a white man. And then he started behaving as a white man. And he learned all the black white man ways. And the white man ways is to hate black folks. And that's why Lincoln was like he was. So when we look at things, we got to go back and reread that Bible, because the Bible belonged to black folks. The Bible ain't talking about no other race on the planet but black people. But the white man in 70 A.D., 31 years after Jesus, went on the cross and died 31 years later. Rome came back and enslaved the whole Israelite. That's the last time black people had dominance over the promised land, Israel. That was what we lost. And we fled back down because our skin colors are like Egypt and all the other native African folks. They blend us all in as one, but we ain't African American. We are Hebrew Israelites, 12 tribes. That's the only somebody God concerned with. All the other people are just them choices you just said. We make those choices to love the other race. The other race ain't never loved us. It ain't another race on the planet. You just got through naming out. You just got through naming out all these other black folks and all the other races that come over here but don't know the American, African-American experience. They coming over on the foundation. All the pain and suffering and killing and abuse of the original black man here on, in America. So they come over here, Puerto Rican, that ain't no nationality. That ain't no people. That's a place. And they naming you after the place you were born. You take an apple seed from Puerto Rico, it's still going to be an African. It's still going to be a apple seed. Wherever the black man goes, he's still a black man. Just because he speaks another language, because he was raised up under the colonization of Portuguese, so he talked Portuguese. If he was under Spaniards, he talking Spanish. When we was under the dominance of white folks in America and the Englishmen, we talk English. And that's the reason we don't have no unity among black folk, because whatever slave master taught you, that's what you believe. And then you think you different from somebody else. When that white man noted that all of us came on the boat at different times, or some of us already on over here all the time. That's the whole gist of all the confusion. And then isolate, trick the people into thinking that we ain't the Indians. They come and name whatever they want to name folk. Then they come back and separate all of it out. Or who are any, who ain't any, who are Cherokee. And they blending in their virus seeds into all of it. Start having sex with your sister, brothers, and lighten the skin up, break a Japanese and put in the house, sex with them, and then they get all these different features and all this other stuff. But ain't nothing going to stop the original man, which is the black man. And I close out right there. Let us not be confused about what's been taught to us. Don't listen to none of the history that the white man putting out there, because he ain't did never lie. He fit the description of he came to kill, steal, and destroy. And if the Bible said the devil came to kill, steal, and destroy. Now, what race of people on the planet fit that description? Kill, steal, and destroy. Confusing. Author of all lies. That's the devil. The white man is the author of all lies. Everything out here is a lie. Baptist. All them white folks started all that mess. We look at religion, they got one little bit of truth about every religion out there. The Methodist said, sprinkle, and you got Jesus. The Baptist said you got to be all the way submerged and brought back up. Went down a wet devil, went down a dry devil, come back up a wet devil. Don't know nothing. Jehovah Witness said, Jesus didn't share power, God didn't share no power with nobody. The Muslims said, I don't know what the Muslims said. Muhammad got the message. And Muhammad, you can go find Muhammad's grave. He died and didn't get back up. But anyway, we'll close out right there and yield the floor to other people. And that's my little 2 cents tonight.
Yeah, people, I just want to emphasize that, you know, it's so important, truth. Everybody use that biblical cliche, the truth will set you free, but that's true. It will set you free to a certain extent when you know the truth. But it doesn't mean that it's gonna make you happy. It doesn't mean it's gonna make you rejoice. It doesn't mean it's gonna make you accept it. It's gonna be hard to accept, because it's hard to accept the truth. When you tell somebody you a liar, you a thief, you a murderer, you a prostitute, you a gangbanger, you alcoholic, you drug addict. That might be the truth, but it's gonna be hard for them to receive that truth. It's going to be difficult for them to receive that truth. And that's what we're dealing with in America. America do not want to tell the truth. But the Bible says in the end, they would know the lie from the truth, but they would prefer the lie. And that's what you're dealing with right now. You're dealing with folks that prefer the lie. And we have to talk our truth. We have to tell the truth. We have to be about truth. We have to be about telling it T.I. is just like it is. We have to be able to do that. That's very important that we do that. And, you know, there ain't nowhere around it. Ain't nowhere around it at all. You got to deal with it. You got to deal with it. It's hard sometimes, but it will, in the final analysis, when it's all over, you know, you'll feel better about yourself. And, you know, you can move on. So we're gonna listen a little bit to Jeff Robinson, a little bit about the slavery business, and give a little understanding on that point, and then we'll talk about that.
If you have ever owned a slave, please raise your hand. Slavery is not our fault. We didn't do it. We didn't cause it. It's not our responsibility, but it is our shared history. And when we try and turn it into something that it's not, when we try and make more light of it than it was, then we are denying who we really are, and we are impeding our ability to truly move forward as a community or as a nation.
In most cases, in the South, that's the way it worked, because they were treated as family, and they knew what they had. They didn't know what they were being faced with if they left.
So your view is that enslaved people were treated as family?
That's basically the way it was down South.
So what I want to talk to you about is part of the ugliness of our history. I want all of us to understand just how we laid the groundwork to own other human beings as property.
And so I think what I'm looking at are shackles that were designed for an adult male and shackles that were designed for a child of maybe 3 or 4.
Yes, yes.
41 of the 56 people who signed the Declaration of Independence owned other human beings as property. When they were talking about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, they saw that as being completely consistent with enslaving people.
Question. What kind of things happened here?
Lynchings or hangings took place here on this very spot.
Black folks here in Charleston refer to it as the lynching tree.
America has demonstrated its greatness time and time and time again, and America is one of the most racist countries on the face of the earth. Those two things are not mutually exclusive. It is not an either or.
There must be a revolution of values in our country, because some of the values that presently exist are certainly out of line with the idealistic structure that brought our nation into being.
I was 11 years old in 1968, and to my young eyes, we had been on a path toward racial justice that was amazing. There was the Civil Rights Act, the Voting Rights Act, and we were seemingly, to me, at a tipping point where we were either going to roll forward with this incredible momentum on racial justice, or we could roll back. And then April 4th happened, and King got shot in the neck, and it felt like the whole thing just rolled back.
And a man grabbed me by the arm and said, "We don't allow blacks in the gym." And I remember turning to y'all, and I said, "They've got a problem with the clock and with what's going on here. We all are out here. We're leaving."
I didn't know that.
I figured not.
Once again, America is having to look at issues of race dead in the eye, and once again, we are at a tipping point. And the reason I'm asking us to think about this is that literally, the future is at stake.
And Larry, he came out with his hands in the air and said, don't shoot. Put the shotgun in his stomach and pulled the trigger. It closed range.
And what I'm going to ask us to do tonight is to have a naked lunch moment with race in America. It's that moment when everyone has to take a look at what is really on the end of their fork.
If I may ask you a question, Jeff. Perhaps if Dylann Roof was educated, if he understood that he may not have gone down this path, what are your thoughts?
This is not going to be easy, but I can promise you this. It will never get easier to have an honest discussion about race in America than it is right now. Because if we wait, it is only going to get harder.
The Larry that you heard referred to in that trailer was a young man named Larry Payne, who was 6 years older than I was, and he was killed in Memphis, Tennessee the week before King was assassinated, 1 week to the day. There was a march in support of striking sanitation workers, and that march broke into violence. Larry was confronted by a police officer who put a shotgun in his stomach and pulled the trigger. And his memory has been one of the things that's been forgotten about the garbage strike and the movement in Memphis. So I am Jeff Robinson, and I am a criminal defense lawyer from Seattle, Washington. And you could be asking, why are you here and why are you doing this? And that would be a completely legitimate question. And this is the way I'm going to answer it. In 2011, I became a parent because my wife's younger sister, Jeannie, who lived in Queens, New York, was suffering from MS and she passed away. And her 13-year-old son, Matthew, my nephew, then became my 13-year-old son because he was being raised by Jeannie and Jeannie's mother. Jeannie passed away in April of 2011, and her mom, my wife's mom, passed away in November of 2011. So Matt lost both of his parents. His father was never in the picture, and he moved to Seattle. Now, I was terrified about being a parent because I didn't know anything about how to do that. And I was scared a lot. But I was more scared because there was a young black man that moved into my home. And my work as a criminal defense lawyer in Seattle had been for 30 or 35 years working on issues of racial justice, working on issues for clients of color, working and speaking around the country on these issues. They were very important to me, but they were academic to a certain extent until Matthew showed up on my doorstep. And I got scared. And one of the reasons I was scared is that there had been a narrative going on in America about young black men for more than a decade, and it went something like this.
They are often the kinds of kids that are called super predators. No conscience, no empathy. We can talk about why they ended up that way, but first we have to bring them to heal.
Bring them to heal. As soon as you start talking about human beings like they're animals, get ready for some really bad shit to come. Because that's how we do it in America. We dehumanize people before we start to treat them as less than human. And so I was scared and I didn't know what to do, and I just started reading. And as I started reading, I was shocked. I didn't even know what I was looking for. But I started reading facts about our history in America that I had never seen before, that I had never heard before. And it was just scaring me and it was shocking me. And it was shocking me because, as I said in that clip, I was born in Memphis, Tennessee in 1956 and was assassinated in 1968. The civil rights movement wasn't something I read about in a book. It was what we were living when we stepped out the door of our house in the black neighborhoods in Memphis, Tennessee every day of our lives. And yet I was reading about these facts about our history that I had never heard before. I have had one of the best educations in America. I went to Marquette University and Harvard Law School, and nobody ever taught me this stuff. And so I felt humiliated, and then I felt angry, because I thought, well, how come nobody taught me this? And so I thought, I'm going to forgive myself and get pissed off at my teachers, and I'll blame them. And then I thought, well, how could they have taught me if they weren't taught? And the amazing thing about this stuff is that these facts are hiding in plain sight. All you have to do is go and look, because human beings from the time of the cave drawings in France that are 30,000 years old, human beings have a trait that has always been part of our existence. When we think we're doing something important, we write stuff down and we keep it so people can read it later. And our history from the time the colony started is written down in plain fact for anybody that wants to take a look. And so I started to take a look, and I started to do these presentations about 7 or 8 years ago. And as they developed, I kept doing them, and I gave a presentation in 2017 in New York City. And one of the people in the audience was a woman named Sarah Kunstler. Is Sarah's father-in-law in the audience? Do I hear anybody? Yeah. Could you stand up and introduce yourself, please?
Hi, my name is John Ferguson. I'm Sarah's.
Thank you, John, for coming, and I please give him a hand. Because Sarah Kunstler is the daughter of the famed civil rights lawyer William Kunstler. And Sarah came up to me after the presentation and said, I'd like you to meet my sister Emily, because we own a film company and we'd like to make a documentary about your presentation. And I thought that was the most stupid thing I had ever heard in my entire life. 1 year later, we are performing in Town Hall Theater on Broadway in New York City in front of a sold-out audience with 7 cameras filming. And since that time, we have gone across America filming interviews to put together a documentary called Who We Are, A Chronicle of Racism in America. What I'm here to do tonight is to give you an idea of what this documentary will cover and to give you a sense of the arc of the documentary, because I think that's perhaps the most important thing about this film is the arc that we're trying to cover. When people talk about slavery and atrocities that have happened in our past, what we often hear is, yeah, but that was a long time ago. It doesn't have any impact on the way things are today. And that's something that I want to challenge with this film. And so what I'd like to do is to walk through 4 segments of this arc. And this won't be everything that the documentary covers, I promise you that. But it will give you a flavor for the things that I think can make America look at who we are differently and can make us take steps that we have not yet taken in our existence. This stuff was hiding in plain sight. The term white supremacy is a difficult term and an extreme term, and I think it is used, and some people feel that it might be overused. What I want you to consider is that white supremacy was one of the founding pillars of American society. Now, if you think that's an overstatement, in the documentary, we will walk through the historical documents that will lay this out clearly. But some of what you'll see is that we know in 1619 we have these records of 20 and odd enslaved people landing somewhere near Jamestown, Virginia. But did you know that by 1790, American cotton production had grown to 1.5 million pounds a year? Has anybody on the stage ever held a freshly picked piece of cotton in your hand? And I don't mean something out of an aspirin bottle, but like out of a field, no twigs. How much does it weigh? I can't tell you how many cotton balls that weigh near nothing it took to get to 1.5 million pounds, but I can tell you how many enslaved people it took, 700,000. In 171 years, America went from 20 and odd enslaved people to 700,000. And the details behind this story are part of what we will paint in the documentary with historical documents. Many people will say, if you're talking about the history of enslavement in America, you really can't talk about the colonies because that wasn't America yet. America didn't happen until we broke away from England. And what I'd like you to think about in terms of the arc of this story is that the white supremacy that was at the heart of the economic life of the colonial Americans was doubled down upon when we wrote our Constitution. Article 1, Section 2 is the three-fifths clause. Every black person in America was counted as three-fifths of a human being. If I asked people in this room before I started this presentation, what is affirmative action? Almost all of us would say, oh, those were programs of uplift in the 60s and 70s directed at the black community. And then at some point the U.S. Supreme Court said, hey, that's reverse discrimination, and now there's kind of a balance. I'm not quite sure where it is. Many Americans think affirmative action started in the 1960s. Can you think of a more powerful form of affirmative action than giving one race of people the right to own another race? Article 1, Section 9, no ban on migration or importation of such persons before 1808. The word slavery, enslaved or slave, did not appear in the Constitution until the 13th Amendment. We'll get to that in a minute. Because the North understood that the South was upset by that word. It was kind of harsh. And so enslaved people were referred to as such persons. And no ban on migration meant that we need to keep the ships going to Africa to bring more enslaved people back because we are getting rich off of this. We can't cut this trade off until 1808. Article 2, Section 1. Each state shall appoint a number of electors equal to the number. One reason, to give the southern states a guarantee that they would have a significant role in electing the president of the United States. And here is where you will hear letters from people like Patrick Henry. Remember him, y'all? Give me liberty or give me death. Well, when the Constitutional Convention was happening, people thought they were doing something important. So they wrote stuff down. And Al Gore hadn't invented the internet yet, so people had to write letters to each other. And Patrick Henry, you will see in the documentary, an actor reading Patrick Henry's letter about there are 236,000 blacks in Virginia and fewer none in the northern states. Multiply 236,000 by three-fifths and you still get a big number, especially considering the size of America at the time. This was done directly to further the interest of the slave-owning states. Article 4, Section 2, no freedom for any runaway slave must be returned on demand. And I was telling Art earlier, I've been giving this presentation or some version of it for 7 or 8 years, and I have just realized recently that this document says an incredible thing. This part of the Constitution makes it clear that from the first day that this country came into existence, America turned to its law enforcement officers and said, your job is to control, contain, and suppress every black face in America. We wrote it in the Constitution. Because if there's no freedom for a runaway, what does that mean? The United States Marshals Service is on you to bring you back to your owner. And finally, people say the folks that wrote the Constitution were brilliant, and they were. Go back to Article 1, Section 9. No state could pass a law saying you can't bring enslaved people from Africa into our state, because that would be unconstitutional. But these folks were wily. They said, what if folks try and amend the Constitution? And so they doubled down, and they said, you can't amend Article 1, Section 9 until after 1808. They were going to keep those ships coming. The word slavery is mentioned once in the 13th Amendment, which did not rid America of slavery. Neither slavery nor involuntary servitude, except as punishment for a crime, shall exist within the United States. That means that slavery and involuntary servitude do exist for people who have been convicted of a crime. Think about the new Jim Crow and mass incarceration in the light of this amendment. This was not done by mistake. And the documentary will demonstrate people knew exactly what they were doing when they wrote this amendment. So I wish I could see a show of hands. How many people know who the Colonial Marines were? I am trying to demonstrate how we have been deprived of the truth about our history. If you were never taught who the Colonial Marines were, the Colonial Marines were escaped enslaved people that fought for the British in the War of Independence and during the War of 1812. Why? Because the British said, if we win, you get your freedom. And the Colonial Marines in the War of 1812 were part of British troops that attacked the Americans right outside of Washington, D.C., drove them back into Washington, D.C., and set the White House on fire. And one of the people who was watching that happen was Francis Scott Key. And 3.5 weeks later, he was in Baltimore Harbor watching the bombing of Fort McHenry. And after 25 consecutive hours of bombing, when he saw the American flag still flying, he became overcome with patriotic fervor, and he wrote the poem that became the national anthem.
And where is that band who so vauntingly swore that the havoc of war and the battle of home and country should leave us no more. Their blood has washed out their foul footsteps' pollution. No
No refuge can save the hireling and slave from the terror of flight, because we will hunt you down, or the gloom of the grave, because we will put you in the dirt if you dare fight against America for your freedom. And there are historians who will be anxious to tell you, well, Francis Scott Key wasn't talking about those enslaved people. He was talking about some other enslaved people. Francis Scott Key was a virulent racist. Francis Scott Key prosecuted a man in Washington, D.C. after the Civil War for possessing abolitionist literature, which carried the death penalty. Francis Scott Key called black Americans the worst plight to ever be inflicted on America. This is who wrote our national anthem, and these are the words. We may not sing them anymore, but they're there. And if you didn't know this, I wonder what you might think of black athletes who kneel quietly protesting racial injustice, knowing that this is our national anthem. And in the documentary, we will use all kinds of evidence to demonstrate just how much America relied on enslaving people. But this is an example of what it was about. The 1856 unique defense to the charge of murder that was put forward on behalf of Margaret Garner. And what Margaret Garner did is best described by a newspaper article from the Cincinnati Enquirer from 1856.
Great excitement existed throughout the city the whole day of yesterday in consequence of the arrest of a party of slaves and the murder of her child by a slave mother while officers were in the act of making the arrest. A party of 17 slaves escaped from Boone and Kenton counties in Kentucky about 16 miles from the Ohio on Sunday night last, and taking with them two horses and a sled, drove that night to the Ohio River opposite to Western Row in this city. Leaving the horses and sled standing there, they crossed the river on foot, on the ice.
One of the narratives in America that has been very popular is that, yes, slavery was a bad thing, but it wasn't that bad. There were like good living conditions, and they had good food, and they were treated okay. Just how bad does it have to be for you to take your family and cross the Ohio River in the middle of the winter on foot, on the ice, not knowing if the ice will break, for you to fall through? It was bad enough that Margaret Garner and her family took that risk. And when the U.S. Marshals showed up the next day in Cincinnati to arrest her, as the Constitution required them to do, Margaret Garner took a knife, grabbed her daughter, and slit her throat. Then she went after her sons, and the marshals got to her before she could complete her task. This is an oil painting, a rendering of what Margaret Garner did, experienced. And Alfre Woodard helped us with reading that poem at the event in Town Hall in New York.
Then, said the mournful mother, if Ohio cannot save, I will do a deed for freedom. She shall find each child a grave. I will save my precious children from their darkly threatened doom. I will hew their path to freedom through the portals of the tomb. A moment in the sunlight, she held a glimmering knife. The next moment she had bathed it in the crimson fount of life. They snatched away the fatal knife. Her boys shrieked wild with dread. The baby girl was pale and cold. They raised it up. The child was dead. Send this deed for fearful daring through my country's heart, no thrill. Do the icy hands of slavery every pure emotion chill?
Like this. This is what slavery was. It wasn't something else. This is who we are as Americans when we talk about our history, because Margaret Garner was charged with first-degree murder for killing her daughter, and the murder charges were dismissed. Because in order to be convicted of first-degree murder, you have to kill a human being. And what Margaret Garner killed was an enslaved child. So Margaret Garner, her husband, and her three sons were returned to their owners to live out.
Seems like it's never enough. there's nothing left to do. You just stand and watch the Lord see you through. Yes, after you've done all you can, you just tell me, how do you handle guilt of your past? Tell me, how do you deal with the shame? And how can you smile while your heart has been broken and
just yeah.